This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Bruno Berti, Senior Vice President of NTT Data Centers. Bruno, hi.
Hi, Ian. As you mentioned, Bruno Berti. I'm in charge of product management with NTT Data Global Data Centers. What that really means is, being in charge of product, I get to work with a lot of our customers. I get to figure out what they need, what they're doing inside of our data centers, because to me that's really trying to get to the heart of what we need to build. And then I take all that information, as a standard product manager does, and drive our future, our roadmaps. Where are we going? What do we need to do? How do we stay on top of what our customer needs are? That's one of the differentiators for us at NTT, which is probably the favorite part of my job, is we get to build what the customers want and need, as opposed to just build a data center and figure out how to get customers inside of it. But we really take the customer approach, and I get to be a part of that.
How complex has it become reorganizing your data centers? If we go back, 7 years when you started the NTT Limited journey, which was to bring 30, 40 companies together, and then after that, the move to become the larger NTT Data when they took over, which was to bring 110 companies together. Most, if not all, of those companies had data centers. A large percentage of them were data center operators with multiple generations of equipment, multiple locations, often overlapping. Where are you on that rationalization journey, and where are you on thinking about what the future data center will be?
That's one of the exciting things about NTT. When they got into the data center space, they were in data centers forever in Japan. Obviously, telecom provider data centers are an integral part of telecommunications. But when they decided to get into data centers back in 2013, they approached it in an M&A fashion. They bought a company, Raging Wire, which was one of the top boutique brands in the U.S. They bought Gyron and eShelter in Europe. They bought NetMagic in India. And obviously they had their assets in the rest of APAC as well as Japan. The interesting thing is, in buying those best of breed companies, they had a pretty diverse and unique data center product. When we started working together, they didn't bring us together right away. We got to operate as independent entities for a little while. We got to expand under NTT's financing, which was great. We got to expand in some of the other key markets. But what we discovered as we started working together is the product offerings that we had were pretty similar. The methodology that we had was pretty similar. And actually, probably the best part is our client base was consistent across those regions. So we had multiple customers that had data centers in those various companies.
I find that interesting, because when I look as an outsider over the years I've known NTT, I look at how disparate NTT Comms data center strategy was. It was still focused on a telecom market. It wasn't focused on a data market. I look at Dimension Data from South Africa. I look at the various German companies. You have 4 data center companies in Germany, all serving different parts of the market with different offerings at different price points. And there was absolutely no commonality in those groups. So when you talk about commonality bringing together, how did you take the culture that you built in the US with those various businesses and make that now that global data center culture?
Where we started with NTT, they really let each of our regions drive, expand, grow based on the merits and the skills that they had in the organization.
But that's the joy of being a Japanese-owned company.
You hit the nail on the head. That's how we started, and it was pretty successful. And we got to a point where we were spending, building a data center is a capital-intensive endeavor. So we started spending a lot more money because of our expansion plans, aggressive plans, and our successes. We were very successful. One of the things that NTT realized is, let's bring us together. So instead of competing for CapEx, the U.S. should get more money than Germany. Germany should get more money than India. So we brought ourselves together under the leadership of Doug Adams, who's our new CEO of Global Data Centers. The first thing he did when he took over about 2 years ago was not operate as 4 or 5 independent companies anymore. What we've done, we have 1 product team, 1 sales team, 1 construction team, 1 finance and HR team, and we're operating globally. What got us successful in the early days was having that local focus. We have relationships with customers locally. We have relationships with communities and governments locally. What Doug is taking is we have some centralized leadership with local intimacy. That's one of the reasons why we're successful. So back to your point, we are standardizing on our products globally. What our product looks like in the U.S. is going to be the same product in Europe, same product in India. We can actually gain those economies of scale from the supply chain. And guess what? Now our customer that buys a data center in Virginia knows what he's going to get in terms of SLAs, master agreements, all that other stuff in Europe. We've been able to start navigate. We're not there yet, but we're very far along that process. It all started from being centrally led, but locally driven.
If I look at those various countries and locations, like anybody who's building a data center business, you tend to build campuses. You reached a point where those companies, when they were all separate, were allowed to compete. And it meant you had a lot of campuses close to each other that had plenty of spare space because there was an expectation of expansion. Now, 5-7 years ago, we'd have all gone, oh my God, we need to get rid of that space. And honestly, 5-7 years ago, we were watching the market starting to slow down. Another good reason for that merging of the process. But we look today, and there's been this massive revival in data centers driven by AI. How do you now start to position your data centers? Because clearly some will meet sustainability goals. Others won't. Some will be sitting on ingress points for transatlantic cables or undersea cables elsewhere in the world. Some won't. Some will be able to take very high haul rates. You and I remember when a 5 megawatt data center was seen as fantastic. Now, if you're not at the 30, 40, 50 megawatt, you're not in the game with AI. So how do you restructure for that changing need? Because some of those needs will still be there for basic data, but you've got to be able to accommodate the AI.
We're already accommodating AI. We've already got that scale, and we're deploying over 200 megawatts of liquid cooling specifically to handle some AI learning workloads our customers are driving towards. One of the other things that I want to highlight, which is a differentiator in my view with NTT, is that we're not PE backed. We're not driven by trying to fund each individual project. Holdings, our parent company who funds us, is actually committed. I think we're at $10 billion through FY27 that they've committed out of their portfolio or their balance sheet that we can use for expansion. We don't have to wait for a contract to start a project. Having said that, this is the fun part of my job, is that I get to work globally with the teams. It's not just me. But I get to prioritize markets. I get to prioritize in Virginia, I better have a 300-acre campus. In Berlin, maybe a campus that has 3 or 4 buildings is good enough. So we get to look at the markets that we're in. We get to look at the markets that we want to expand in. I get to put that together in a 10-year roadmap, prioritized, because I try to spend as much time talking to my target clients. One of our other differentiators is I'm not just selling to hyperscale. I'm not just selling to these new AI GPU companies. I'm not just selling to financial services. I've actually got thousands of customers in my portfolio. I can sell racks. I can sell 100 kW. I can sell megawatts. And I can sell complete buildings and complete campuses. That's some of the product portfolio that we have. The way we've been able to your point, expand and grow is we've prioritized based on our customer feedback, taken a product-centric approach to make sure that we're ahead of the game. The reason we were so successful 2 years ago when this really started hitting the data center industry is we said yes to a couple risky questions from our clients to say, can you pivot this whole building to liquid? And we said yes. And we did it, worked with them, and we started deploying some new age liquid technology so that we could deliver 36 megawatts of liquid cooling to an AI type data center. We made some strategic plays. We made some flexibility decisions with our clients and said yes. The other question you asked with regards to how are we evolving our data centers? Some of them are obviously designed to be carrier hotels that don't need the density. So that's working with clients. That's working in specific markets. That's the new design that we have in building a standard data center is designed to be flexible. We have our primary water loop that extracts heat from the building. That's designed to the capacity of the building. And then that water loop either feeds an air handler that blows air in the data center, or we can actually tap in, remove that air handler, or keep that air handler, and tap in a CDU or a liquid coolant distribution unit to put a secondary loop inside the data center to use liquid instead of air. We have that flexibility and we're willing to make that decision post RFS or post opening.
But where does that take you on sustainability? Water cooling is a great idea, but it is a scarce resource, a resource that's getting harder around the world. If we look at the Nordics, some of the smarter builds that are going on, particularly in the AI data center space, are absolutely building in conjunction with various cities. We want to put a data center in. We've got hydro coming from here, but we're going to be generating heat no matter what we do. So we will hook that to your city system to deliver heat back. The same comes from choosing where you're going to get power. There's nothing more embarrassing than watching somebody open a data center and say, oh yes, we're going all green power, but actually it's being generated by wind farms 1,000 miles away. Really? Seriously? The transmission loss is ridiculous.
And the carbon footprint.
The carbon footprint, absolutely. So how do you find that balance for your sustainability?
Let me start with saying sustainability is in the forefront of everything we do. It's in our design. We've even made commitments that we're actually making decisions every day to make sure that we are sustainable. The first thing I just want to correct you on, at least for us, is our water loops are completely closed, both our primary and our secondary, so we don't waste any water. We actually have air-cooled chillers that allow us to circulate that liquid that's already contained inside that loop and not use any additional liquid. So we waste no water, no liquid in our solutions, because that liquid actually is one of the more efficient ways to extract heat. It's a lot more efficient than air, so doing that allows us to be more efficient. And I'm glad you brought up the heat recovery solution, because we pioneered that in Berlin. Our data centers in Berlin have heat recovery built in. Our new data center, which we just announced in Berlin, is going to have the heat recovery system as part of that. We're heating community pools, office buildings, schools, apartment complexes as part of that, because in Berlin, the infrastructure in Germany, it's already set up to do that. We tap in, we provide the heat, they use it, and we do a good thing for the community. That's being done in most of our new developments where that heat recovery capability is allowed or required. In Germany, I think it's 20% of the heat that's generated from the data center has to be recovered.
Which is important, because communities are already seeing impacts on the power costs to them, because data centers suck power out when they become urban. Power costs go up because the generators have to produce more. They want something back. Do you find yourselves offering it back and asking the question when you look to drop a data center, or is it being driven by municipalities?
We work very closely with the municipalities, to your point. I just want to give a story, because I thought this was something we did really well. In Sacramento, in California, a couple years ago, there was a heat wave, and the grid was being severely impacted. As you know, data centers typically have a lot of redundancy built into the design, including generators. They reached out to us and said, hey, can you offload the grid for us? So for a week period, when there was the potential for brownouts in California, we offloaded 30 megawatts in Sacramento, and we offloaded about 20 megawatts in Santa Clara, giving 50 megawatts of power back to the community, where we were able to run generators for a few hours and offloaded that risk of brownouts. We work very closely with the communities, and being able to do things like that helps us change some of the narrative with the community backlash and concern that's happening. It's one of the things that's important, is to educate the community that data centers aren't bad. In fact, putting computers in a data center is a lot better than some of the alternatives, especially one that's designed with sustainability, with the ability to recoup some of that power, with some of the other sustainability initiatives that we are driving towards. We have a net 30 goal. So by 2030, we're going to be net zero on scope 1, scope 2. By 2040, we're going to add scope 3.
How fast can you take that further? If I look at Microsoft, Microsoft paid to have Three Mile Island reopened. They're not the only big player to have gone out and done a deal to have nuclear power plants restarted. We know Microsoft has a number of nuclear engineers on staff now, as it's looking for microfusion, which has become quite competitive. There's 7 or 8 companies really competing here. The idea of microfusion in a campus. Now, there are a whole bunch of issues around that we won't touch on. We won't have time to touch on that. Where is NTT in this? There's still an awful lot of concern in Japan over what happened at Fukushima. There's a lot of interest in the idea of restarting nuclear because of the need for power in the country. But there is an inbuilt resistance. And it's in many ways a generational inbuilt resistance. So what are the drivers from corporate to you and from you forward in different territories for the idea of looking at fusion and other solutions?
Let me address that maybe a little bit less specific. The power requirements in the data center industry are real, to your point. The data center industry, specifically us, we've been looking for alternatives for probably a couple of years. And those alternatives could include nuclear large scale, like Amazon and Microsoft did. The large scale nuclear and the power plants work great for them because they have a consistent amount of draw. They can commit to a certain power requirement. But if you start looking at data centers such as us that do multi-tenant, looking at alternative energy solutions, on campus type solutions, microgrid, whatever you want to call them, there's a lot of options out there. There's hydrogen fuel cell. There's natural gas fuel cell. There's obviously natural gas cogen with some of the carbon capture technology that provides some carbon neutral solutions. There's a lot of alternate solutions that are being investigated. SMRs and small modular micro reactors that you talked about are an option as well. And the interesting thing with NTT is we're looking at all of them because I don't think it's one versus the other. I think depending on the market where you're going regulatory, we need to have the ability to do all. But the big thing is we can't rely on the grids. Sustainability is not an either or. It's got to be baked into the whole equation. That starts with the design.
There's another reason I asked specifically about Japan. This time last year, I sat down with Vito Mabruko. And on a podcast, and in a separate conversation, Vito said that one of NTT's problems in Japan is it consumes 1% of all the electricity generated in Japan, and that was growing. Where are you on reducing that consumption load, and how do you do that in such a way that you can then replicate that worldwide?
Not sure if I'm specifically answering. I want to dig into that a little bit because the demand curve from data centers is growing, so it's not going to be reduced. The amount that data centers consume is going to grow. The important thing in our conversations is it's growing, but how do we make sure that it grows green, renewable, and sustainable? So there's a couple parts of this that...
Hang on, just to stop you there. Is there not another part of that? You can make it green, you can make it sustainable, it's going to grow, but actually there's still the question of efficiency. Where does efficiency sit in there?
That was the next piece. Our COO says the best electron is the one that we don't use. But in terms of sustainability, we've got three real focuses. One is to consume less. We have do better and do different. That's three fundamental tenets of our sustainability journey. The consume less is making sure the data centers are efficient. I don't want to use the term PUE, but I will use the term the power that goes to the data center floor that's powering that piece of equipment. I want to minimize the extra electricity that's needed, cooling, lighting, all the other things that we're reducing every day. The cooling technologies we use are more efficient. Using liquid to the chip, maybe even immersion technology, we're seeing PUE numbers get closer to 1 by using some of those technologies.
PUE doesn't really say efficiency. PUE is used really badly in this industry. It was a great measurement in the 90s.
The perspective of PUE is only one measure, and it is an interesting one if you are measuring it properly. The key thing I look at is how much energy is being used by the servers and the stuff that's inside the data center versus the energy I need to provide that. So there's waste in UPSs, there's waste in the inversion, there's waste in the cooling. So trying to minimize as much of that. And we've done some pretty interesting things as an industry. We're providing now 480 volts, which is minimizing some of the losses in transformation. We're looking at eliminating UPSs for some of our clients that don't need that redundancy or have some additional fault tolerance in the floor, which is improving efficiencies. That could be, in some measure, 5% of the losses that come through the equation. We're doing a lot of those types of things to reduce the amount of excess energy required to power that data center. I won't say PUE again, excess power. But that's an important part of it as well. And that's why I love this conversation, because sometimes when you talk to people, all they think about is cooling or green power. But it is a lot more than that. It's trying to minimize, and even looking at those diesel engines, we've converted most of our diesel engines, or we've started to convert them to hydrogenated vegetable oils, which are a little more, I won't say green, but they do allow us to recycle things that are already being used. Or it's allowing us to recycle a bit better. And we have found that HVO is actually more efficient and less dirty than diesel in some of our trials that we've done as well. Heat recovery is big too.
Where does our next generation of efficiency come from? If we look at the period probably 99 through to 2015, all of our gains came from hardware. Servers got more efficient, processors got more efficient. The hardware industry that put the kit into our facilities generally drove efficiency and power gains. Along comes the GPU, and it goes out the window. This nice little curve we've had of everything working well, it's like somebody just lit the blue touch paper and up it went. Where do we find that efficiency around that AI data center? We're no longer building halls that we think are going to be 20, 30 megawatts. I'm seeing people talking about 50, 60.
We opened our first 84 megawatt data center in Virginia in December.
So where is that next generation of efficiency? What drives it?
There's a couple areas there. As I mentioned, there's been a lot of innovation in cooling. The size of CDUs, the way to distribute liquid to those chips, the efficiency gains out of using liquid instead of air, right? We're talking 120 kW racks, 150 kW racks. Jensen at GTC at NVIDIA was talking about 600 kW racks. So there has to be a lot more innovation in cooling. There has to be a lot more innovation that happens in power delivery. I've read some papers about using DC instead of AC because of the inversions. So there's going to be a lot more innovation in the field of the design inside the data center. You're going to see innovations in the generation that happens beside the data center. We talked about some of those technologies that I think are going to drive a lot of innovation. We've just been talking about the data center. We still have to figure out how the customers can use the majority of the load that they have. There's still a 50%, 70%, maybe 80% load that they're using. If they have a megawatt, they might use 800 kW of it. And that's a great customer. So we have to figure out how they can use more of that load on their compute. The whole system works better when you're using it to the design. So there's going to be a lot of efficiency gains on that side as well.
One of the losses we rarely talk about is transmission loss. Transmission loss can be 3 to 5% of the generated electricity. If we look at a technology that NTT is very well connected with, that's IOWN, one of the focal points is the idea that we are able to transmit faster down the fiber. We can move more down the fiber by new technologies. We can reduce the usage of energy inside devices by going mainly photonic. We'll never get all photonic. If we were going to do that, we wouldn't have the stand talking about aluminium nitrate out there and high heat. Although that has a potential, which we might come back to in a second. But it does require that we then relocate those data centres close to the generation point. Even without IOWN, if we think about moving our data centres closer to generation to minimise the amount of transmission loss, have you done any calculation on what the additional cost would be of laying the fibre, of potential delay, which IOWN has the possibility to overcome, versus the savings from the transmission loss?
We haven't done those calculations, and I'll tell you why. Because what we're looking at, instead of going to the generation, which is what Amazon and Microsoft has done, I think the solution is, can we bring the generation to the data center? Because you said something that I think we've always taken for granted from an NTT perspective. We're not putting data centers in locations that don't make sense. Mm-hmm. There's certain locations, and you said it, connectivity is a critical aspect of data centers. So when people say it doesn't matter where the data center is for AI, I don't agree, and I actually think it's critical. The established data center markets globally, where there's fiber, where there's connectivity, whatever the usage is that's going to be critical. getting the generation to the data center is a better way of trying to eliminate some of those transmission losses. Also trying to eliminate some of the impact to the grids and the community, because now you have captive generation. I think that's where we're going to see some additional innovation, and that's why we're not looking at going to a generation source as opposed to trying to figure out if we can get generation sources on site. Instead of building a substation, can we build a generation plant that powers 40, 50, 60 megawatts?
Which takes us back partly to that idea of small fusion, but also it takes us back to the idea of waste disposal. More and more organizations are talking about burning waste to generate energy, but there comes with that issues of carbon capture and capturing all sorts of other elements. If we look in parts of Europe, Belgium, for example, around Ghent, there is an operator there who is working very fast towards a circular economy, not just on recycling from waste, but also the energy they create. They burn it, they power their own vehicles, they provide power back into the local community, and they've invested heavily in new forms of capture to take dioxins and everything else out of the air, which is one of the major challenges of burning waste.
You've got to burn it at the right temperature, create the plasma effect.
You do, but that's a far cry from where NTT has experience. But if we talk about generation, particularly for urban data centers, that seems to offer some potential for you.
Yeah, we're looking at that, and keep in mind there's some countries and some locales that are more conducive to doing that than others, but that is something that's also pretty relevant, pretty important as well. How efficient can you be? You're burning, generating heat, let me use that heat. Or if I'm generating heat, let me expand that heat and do some recovery processes and try to use more as opposed to just releasing into the environment. That's a promising technology that will help with some of the generation issues as well. It's not like what we said earlier. It's not just about nuclear fusion, hopefully fission someday, but it is about looking at the different alternatives, what exists today. Maybe it's bridging. Maybe we start with natural gas. And we move to maybe a hydrogen fuel cell, we have nuclear, and it's going to be different based on different locales. We need to keep investigating and investing in all options.
I said I'd come back to the question of aluminium nitrate, another technology that NTT is leading on, in fact has demonstrated its ability to operate at 1,000 degrees centigrade. When we think about a data center strategy, aluminium nitrate replacing the traditional silicon that we use at the moment seems to offer way more potential than I'm afraid photonics does. And IOM will never talk to me again for this. Why are you as the data center team not leading that push for this?
That's the beauty of NTT Research, is that they actually get to think tank and test some options that ultimately will be commercialized. If that technology did replace silicon, to the point where we didn't have to cool that equipment, it would change the equation for data centers, because you still have people working in the data center, but it would remove a significant amount of the cooling requirements for that technology.
We're talking 30-40% cost.
Yeah, exactly. Which is huge, right?
Plus all the power you don't consume that goes into communities, which lowers their costs and everything else.
The nice thing with working with NTT Research is that they're leading the edge and starting to find those applications. One of the great things with NTT is that they're infiltrating that into a lot of the designs and stuff. So yes, we need to work with them. We need to work with the chip manufacturers and start rolling those things in. Can we go back to IOWN for a second? Because I actually think IOWN has a significant benefit in the data center. You mentioned there's two big things with IOWN. There's replacing some of the optical digital technology in the chipset, so that reduces a lot of the heat that happens as well. So that's one benefit. We did a trial at the data center level because we were trying to find different applications where we connected our data centers through a data center interconnect product. Proved to be an interesting technology because it increased the bandwidth from that perspective, so that made it a lot more efficient to be able to use less fiber for more data, which is going to be really important as AI starts to take the model, move away from models and inference. It won't eliminate all of the electrical components within a chipset, but if it could start doing 10%, 20% improvements, that's going to be a significant improvement as well. So I think IOWN has a lot of promise in addition to the aluminum nitrate.
One last question. What does the data center of the future look like?
The most interesting piece for me, I'm the product guy. I'm going to geek out on the data center itself. 5 years ago, the data center was a box. They were ugly. They're actually a lot prettier now. We're changing the look. But The interesting thing is the data center and the technology going to the data center were always two different tracks, two different organizations. That's not the case anymore. We're working with the chip manufacturers. We're talking to these people that are launching some of these new technology. How do we design the data center so that that technology is in the forefront as opposed to trying to figure it out later? These great GPUs came in. How do we convert from air to liquid? We're being designed to adopt to some of this new technology. So I think what you're going to see is a lot smaller footprints because those densities are going to go up. You're going to see a lot more sustainability. We're committed to sustainability. We haven't paused at all. You're going to see a lot more community involvement because those data centers are going to be part of the community, not ugly boxes on the outside. You're going to see a lot more software-defined or modular-type components that you can just continue to build on top of that data center to meet some of the capacity requirements instead of a 2.5-year project to build a 500,000-square-foot box that has power, and then you just keep cycling UPSs. So I think the integration and the consolidation of all that stuff is probably the data center of the future.
Sounds cool. Bruno, thank you for spending time with me.
Appreciate it, and thank you for your time as well.